Hey, it's Doug. Welcome to the Mile High Fi podcast. I'm going to pop in for a quick little intro here. Basically, there's going to be like two episodes in this travel hacking tutorial, essentially. It's kind of a how-to guide. I'm uninitiated in a lot of this, so I'm asking some very basic questions. And I think we generally called it like how to fly for free. I think that's the working title. But really, it's like travel hacking all together. And Kristen Knapp joined me because she's a bit of an expert in this area. And well, I didn't know much. I can tell you a few things to just let you know what's going to be coming in this episode and the next one that's coming out next week. Before that, though, I do want to tell you, I have already taken action on the things that I learned from these couple episodes. One, I transferred some points from Chase over to Hyatt and was able to redeem like a hotel stay, and we're like saving some money. It was a good redemption, and I had to jump through a couple hoops. I'll tell you about that maybe next episode, because I have another story for you. So I was able to do that, and I am also getting a new credit card. I believe I'll be getting the Chase Sapphire something or other. I think I'm going to get the one that costs a little bit more, but I'll probably need to think about that just a little bit. We get into all those kind of details. But Kristen's goal was to travel more without spending more, which seems like a worthy goal. And she only wanted to spend like, you know, as minimal as possible, but she spends a few hours per month. Some people spend a little bit more. Me personally, I'm not particularly interested or enthusiastic about like messing around with all these points and stuff like that. So I'm kind of taking like the first layer, and then perhaps later in the future, I can make it more complicated. You can always make things more complicated. So we're going to get into some of the details in this episode. Next episode will be like the more advanced stuff, where maybe you have to plan a little bit more, maybe you're a little bit more aggressive and that sort of thing. Before I go on and send you to the episode, I'm going to tell you a little story. I know some people, particularly on YouTube, they were like, it took 10 minutes to get into the episode, and I appreciate that. If you don't want to listen to my story, then you could fast forward. There's like time stamps or something like that. Other people, they want to hear the story. So I'm going to tell a story. I just got back from Helena, Montana. It was the Montana Beer Awards, and it was a fucking blast. I really had a great time. So for people that don't know, I have been a home brewer of beer since 2007, which at this point is a pretty long time. And I started to get more into beer and brewing around that time frame. And to brew better beer, one thing that you can do is enter into competitions, like homebrew competitions. So it's just other home brewers, and there's judges. And these judges study very hard, and they taste a lot of beer, and they think about beer a lot, and they go through the style guidelines for whatever a certain beer is supposed to be like, and they taste it, and they make notes, and they give those results back to the brewer so the brewer can improve, that they can understand how to make a beer exactly how they want to. So if you want to become a better home brewer, then it's very helpful to go learn how to be a judge. And I did that. So in 2009, I started studying to become a judge. And after many hundreds or even thousands of beers that I've had, I'm a very high-ranking judge. And when I moved to Montana in 2015, I realized there's only five or six judges aside from me. So I thought, hey, I could do a class. I will teach these other home brewers and some pro brewers BJCP, the Beer Judge Certification Program. We'll go through, I'll set up a test. I will create more judges in Montana. So I gave that class, and there were, I don't know, a dozen people in there. I gave a test, blah, blah, blah. A lot of people that were in the class, they became brewers themselves, like at pro breweries. Other people, like half of them, were working in breweries already. And shout out to Bozeman Brewing Company. They let me use their facility, and a lot of their brewers were in the courses there. Anyway, So fast forward, I've moved away. It's, you know, years later, but I'm still in touch. Whenever I go to Montana, I know brewers and, you know, they're fun. I get to go to a place where I get to taste beer and all that. Anyway, a lot of the people that I know are either brewers or they're helping to organize other brew stuff. So there's the Montana Beer Awards. My friends called me up and they were like, hey, you want to come up here and judge? I was like, this sounds awesome. So we went to Helena and it was essentially like 4 days straight of sampling beer and hanging out. And it was Helena Beer Week. So breweries and tap rooms all through the city were hosting events. And well, a lot of the judges are either other brewers in town or other high-ranking judges, mostly industry people. So there were only maybe 4 out of 25. So 4 of us or maybe 5 that were not in the beer industry and we're homebrew judges and we have other stuff that we're working on. So super fun. I definitely want to go back. There's like a ceremony and, you know, sampling beer sounds like a lot of fun, which it is, but it's also mentally taxing. So we have to, you know, fit on a schedule. So we have to make sure we don't goof around too much. You also start judging beer at 8:30 in the morning. So that's pretty early. And in each sample is only, you know, it's about 2 ounces or so. And you can kind of judge a beer with just 1 ounce, but sometimes if we're going back and forth, you know, you need to go back and sample a little bit more. And it's not like wine where you spit it out. We drink the beer. And, you know, when it comes down to it, you're only having a little bit, but there's a handful of beers in the flight. And then you're doing multiple flights per session. And then you're doing this starting in the morning all the way until 5 in the afternoon or so. So you end up just judging, you know, you may have like 3 to 4 12-ounce beers or so. So it's not super conducive for like going on long hikes or working out or whatever. But like I said, it was a lot of fun. Really great community. Obviously, this is a financial independence podcast. But when I go to a Camp 5 or Economy or another thing, you end up hanging out with really cool people with a lot of different backgrounds and stuff like that. And, you know, the FIRE community is an interesting kind of sub community of a bigger personal finance thing. And, you know, this beer stuff is the same way. Like you just walk up to a group of people that are chatting, jump right in, you know, you have a lot of different interests, but like we have common ground and like really geeking out on beer. You have your own vocabulary, you have jargon, and it's super interesting. So that's my story. Now, the cool thing when I was up in Helena, you know, when I travel, I often don't sleep that well because you're in a different bed. And mentally, I just get amped up because I'm chatting with a bunch of new people. So it takes a little while to wind down. The other issue that I've talked about before is just like being a hot sleeper. And that's one thing that I'll talk about our sponsor, Ghost Bed. That's one thing Ghostbed really excels at. So they have like cooling technology within the bed, right? So that helps you sleep a little bit cooler and it actually helps me a lot. We actually have the Ghostbed Lux. And if you want to check out what Ghostbed has to offer, you can see all the different mattresses they have. They have other sleep related products and accessories, really anything that you need to help you sleep a little bit better. And I will tell you, in Helena, it was chilly up there. It's Montana. It's far north. This was in the middle of the freaking winter. So it was cold. But the cool thing, literally, is the window opened. So when I rolled into my hotel room, put on the do not disturb sign, it was like 76 in there, which is pretty freaking hot. I was at the penthouse, of course, on the 3rd floor at the Best Western, which was a nice hotel. I actually enjoyed it a lot in Helena there. But it was so hot. And I realized I could open the window and I'm crazy, right? So I like basically lowered the heat down to 55 and opened the window. So when I got back from judging, it would be very cold in there and it was cold. So that helped a little bit. But anyway, back to Ghostbed. They've been a great supporter out for the last couple of years here. You can save 50% site wide. So check out what they have to offer. You have 101 night at home sleep trial to make sure you're happy with the mattress. And if you happen to be going to economy this year in 2025, Rich will be there. So Rich is my contact over there. He's a fan of the show. He went to economy last year. So many of you will have, you'll remember hanging out with Rich. So go talk to him. He likes to talk about all kinds of stuff, not just bed stuff. But if you do have a ghost bed question, you can ask him. But if you don't, then just go introduce yourself to him. He wants to meet you. And you could thank him for sponsoring the show. So anyway, you could go to ghostbed.com/milehighfi and you could save that 50% at checkout. I think I made it through everything that I was supposed to go through here. I told a story that was unrelated to anything except me talking about myself. We got the ad. And, oh, you know, one more thing I want to let you know. So Kristen did all the work for these episodes. So she put together a massive document with a ton of information, and we mention it later. But basically, if you want to show Kristen your appreciation, you can use her referral links for the various credit cards, which will be somewhere linked in the show notes or description. And I'm personally going to use it because she like helped me a lot on what I needed to do. And I'm probably going to, you know, go down the ranking. There's a couple things that I might need to do, but I do have sort of a large purchase coming up before too long. And I'll be able to put, I think, basically $3,000 or $4,000 on it like that. And we'll be able to get the bonus like almost immediately, which is pretty cool, because then we'll be able to get this bonus, get the 60,000 points on Chase, Sapphire, whatever. And it's gonna work out great. We'll be able to transfer points and do all the stuff that we talk about in the episode. So thank you to Kristen. Personally, I'm thanking you publicly here, and people use her links to help say thank you for all the effort that she put in for the show. Finally, let's get to the episode. Hey, what's going on? Welcome to the Mile High Five podcast. My name is Doug Cunnington, and today I have my lovely friend Kristen helping me today. How are you doing?
I'm all right. It's been an interesting week around here, but you'll hear about that later.
Yeah. And yeah, we talked about a lot of that stuff in the sound check, but the main topic for today is basically travel hacking and earning points and miles and using them effectively. And I'm 90% sure this is going to be a two-parter just because there's so much dense information in here. Now, Kristen, I saw you about a month ago because you were passing through Longmont, but the next time that I'm going to see you should be in Cincinnati at economy. And the thing is, I've been monitoring the price for the ticket, and it's alarmingly higher than what I expected, and it's been climbing up, and I'm like, I should have booked the freaking ticket before. Now, the good part, I do have points on the airline that I'm going to be taking, but I'm almost certain that I'm not using the points most effectively, and nor have I been. So I'm going to learn a lot, but we'll get into all the details, and I do want to give you credit right up front. You did all of the research. You're a bit of an expert with, can we just say travel hacking? Is that the right
term? Yes, great.
Okay. So travel hacking, you're very good at it. Can you talk a little bit about like your journey with travel hacking? Like, when did you get into it? And then we'll get into all the details here.
So I think that I've been passionate about travel for a very long time, but I didn't have enough money to do it as much as I wanted to. So I don't even remember. It's got to be more than 10 years ago. I was on this United flight, and they made some announcement, as they sometimes do. Hey, if you want to open the whatever credit card, we'll give you this many miles for this much spend. And I remember thinking, that sounds too good to be true, you know? And I was like, give me that thing. And I just kind of read it and read all the fine print. I'm like, this could actually work. This is interesting. So I ended up opening that card and got a free flight. I'm like, this is amazing, right? So then I just started doing some research and just going down all the rabbit holes. But the whole point of me starting it was just to be able to travel more without spending more, because, you know, the budget was going to stay the same and I just wanted to do more. But I got to tell you, I mean, there are people who spend so much time on this hobby. And I think when you hear me go through this, you're going to think, oh my God, she must spend. I really don't. I mean, not more than an hour or two a month, but you know, you can do with it as much as you want. I mean, there are people that go hardcore and earn like a million points a year and do crazy manufactured spin stuff. And I don't do any of that. I spend exactly what I was spending before. It's just about being strategic about what cards you put the spend on.
Okay. And I'm a little bit, I would say, resistant to get too deep into it just because I feel like over-optimization is like not... I don't thrive in that environment. I get kind of bored and I don't care too much. But I think there's probably like a level that anyone could go to, whether they want to get super detailed or be a little bit more casual about it. Is that a fair assumption?
Sure. Yeah. Like I said, I don't spend a ton of time. Now, you do have to kind of be a planner, though. I mean, you got to pay attention to it, right? But there are apps now that exist that help you track all of this, which makes it a lot easier, I think. And we'll talk about some of those as we get into it.
Okay. Well, let's get started with some of the basics. You know, immediately I'm thinking like this probably requires like opening several cards and having cards. So you, like you said, you have to be organized, but also, you know, I think about people that might be concerned with their credit score, opening a bunch of cards. Can you talk about like some of the basics to get started here?
Sure. Well, couple main rules. Your credit score's got to be at least 700 or you're not going to get approved. So there's that. You got to have one full year of credit history, which I imagine most of our listeners do. But do not even think about playing this game unless you pay off your credit cards in full every month on time without fail, because these cards have high interest rates. And by the time you carry a balance, what that's going to cost you would negate any value of any of the rewards. So that's the most important thing. If you're not paying them off in full every month, this isn't your show.
Okay, perfect. And I think, you know, through interacting with a lot of people in the audience and the emails that we get, I would have to, I mean, it's a very sophisticated and smart audience.
Right.
And they have,
which is why we're doing the show, because we know this is our people, right?
Yep. So I'd be surprised. I think like most people are probably closer to 800. They probably they pay off their balance each month. So we're in good shape. So that's the minimum.
Well, let's talk about that 800 credit score for just a second. Mm. So once I started playing this game, because I think people think, oh my God, if I open all these cards, my credit's more, whatever. Between me and my husband right now, we have 20 active cards. Our credit scores are well over 800. I think I was like at 826 when I checked the other day. Mm-hmm. So your credit score actually goes up when you do this. Now, here's the thing. We've been taught, there's so many myths out there. When they do a hard inquiry, you know, pull your credit to open a new card, it's like a handful of points. Like it doesn't move the needle. And then a month later, it goes back up anyway. The bigger driver of this is your credit utilization ratio. So think about this for just a minute. Say you have one card with a $10,000 credit limit and you put $3,000 on this card every month and pay it off. So your credit utilization ratio is like 30%, right? Well, now think about if you have 10 cards with a $10,000 limit, now you've got $100,000 in credit, you're still only spending $3,000 a month. What is that, a 3% credit utilization ratio? Hmm. That number drives your credit score up more than anything else. So my credit score skyrocketed when I started doing this. My husband was really nervous about it too, but I was like, I promise. And sure enough, you know, same thing with him. So do not worry about that. There's a lot of misconceptions about that out there. It's fine.
Mm-hmm. Especially with whatever short form social media, I think there's a ton of people that don't know what the fuck they're talking about. So, and again, like at this point, we have a sophisticated audience, should have pretty high credit scores. So what's next after that? I mean, where do we look?
Okay, so let me say this. It's pretty easy to earn a lot of points and miles without traveling a ton. I think I always thought it was just the business travelers that would earn all these points. No. And you don't even have to spend a ton of additional money. Like I said, I don't spend any more than I ever did. It's just about, and if you do, that defeats the purpose, right? So just spend what you're already going to spend. Just be strategic about it. So once you get the points, of course, you can use them for everything. Airfare, hotels, rental cars. You can use them for so many things. At this point, I haven't paid for a flight. I mean, it's got to be almost 10 years at least. And I promise you, I'm not spending any more than I did before. It's just about being strategic. So the goals are this: earn as many points and miles as possible, obviously. Redeem them for maximum travel savings. But at the end of the day, if it's not perfectly optimized, Doug, it's fine. Because at the end of the day, if you get a free flight, you get a free flight. It makes you happy. Great, right? It doesn't have to be perfect. But do it all with spending as little as possible. That's the goal, right? So you can earn, what's your main card you use right now?
A Chase Inc. for the business side. And then the other one, it's a Bank of America type card, and we just use it for cash back.
Okay. So with your Chase card, I think you get like 1.5 points per dollar spent. Do you know? I think that's right.
Don't know.
Yeah, it's right. Yeah. Okay. So you could just keep putting all your spend on that forever and ever. But how long is it going to take you to earn 100,000 points earning 1.5 points per dollar? It's going to take a while, right? So like I have an Amex gold card, which is great for dining and grocery. It gives me 4 points per mile. Awesome, right? But still, how long is it going to take for me to earn 100,000 points? Forever. So you can earn points and miles by just everyday spend like that. There are shopping portals, dining programs. Obviously, when you do go on trips, you earn points that way. But the biggest bang for your buck is that sign-up bonus. When you first got the card, it was like, spend $4,000 in 3 months and earn 50,000 points or whatever it is. It's different. Every card's a little bit different. But usually the minimum spend is going to be somewhere 3 to 4K. Some of them get bigger, some in the business cards and so much. You got to be sure that you can reach that minimum spend in that amount of time. But again, if it's $4,000 in 3 months and I'm putting all of my expenses on there, it's going to be pretty easy for me to do that. But you don't want to be spending more than you were going to do it already. So I just put everything on there. Auto pays, you know, all of it. Mm-hmm. And then the idea is, so you open that card, you get the sign-up bonus, you throw it in a drawer, and then you do it again and again and again and again. So this does not negatively impact your credit score. I promise you, your score is going to go up. So what I do, you can do it more frequently than this, but what I do is I open a card about every 3 months. About every 3 months, earn the sign-up bonus, throw it in a drawer, start on another. Now, there are people, you got to find your comfort level with this, okay? There are people that open a new card every month, and there are some people that haven't opened a card in 10 years. But if you want to play this game, you're going to have to start opening these cards a little bit more frequently. When was the last time you opened a card?
It was about 3 years ago, 2 years ago, something like that. And I was going to say, I knew that I was going to be taking more flights, and I was going to fly United. So I got a United business card, and I think there's a $95 fee, but I think I needed to spend, I want to say it was like 20K in 6 months or something like that.
Oh, wow. Okay. And that's a high one. That's a high one.
Business card, but I think I got like 180,000 points or something. Pretty significant. But yeah, I think there was a 3 month goal, again, kind of the standard $4,000 in 3 months. But if you spent, I think it was 20K, I can't remember, 20K in 6 months, it was like you got another like big bump. So I was like, okay, I see my spend for the last couple of years. I know I can do that. So those are actually the points that I have sort of hoarded, and I will be using. Now, quick question, selfishly. So I have like these points. But I do see, and we could punt this if we need to. So I still have like whatever, 100 some odd thousand points with United.
United, okay.
I will probably take United to Cincinnati. The price is going up. I probably won't get a very good like
redemption.
Redemption, yeah, that is the word. And I'm just like, should I just use the points to use the points because I have them? Knowing that I'm not getting like the best deal that I can get. What do you think for something like that?
What I personally usually do is math out what kind of value I'm getting for my points, right? So price, basically, am I getting at least 2 cents per point if I'm cashing them in? So you could math that out, like see how much your United flight is, see how many points it's costing you. And if you're not getting at least 2 cents per point value, I would probably just pay cash for that flight. But then again, you also, if you have them, a free flight's a free flight. And if it's not a good redemption, who cares? Especially if you get a ton of points, right? Or maybe you explore how much it would cost for you to upgrade to business class. And then maybe you'll find that will drive up your redemption. A lot of times if you use these points for business class, you're getting like 4 cents per point. You know, if you look at the business class price and how many points it will cost you. So you just kind of have to math it out and decide which way to go.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah. Does that make sense?
Yeah, sure does. And the thing is, like, at the end of the day, I'm like, I've been sitting on the points. I thought I was going to be traveling more on United and redeem, like, have reasons to redeem the points for like personal travel. But anyway, I'm in this spot where I like,
well, I will tell you,
I'm like, I should just use them probably.
People who play the game, they say earn and burn, earn and burn, earn and burn. Don't hoard points, because these airlines are always like devaluing the points by all of a sudden what cost you 25,000 points is now 30,000 points or 35,000 points. So it's basically inflation in points, right? So use them.
Right. And I am guilty of that. So the one story I could tell is I started my career in 2004 and I was a business traveler and I was exposed to like the world of, you know, travel hacking and people that were very type A management consultants that traveled every single week. So they were doing things like staying in a hotel for like 2 days and then moving to another hotel to get like various bonuses depending on what deals were going on. We did have our corporate card, but there were other, you know, we would fly a certain airline. Other people did this, not me. They would fly a certain airline to get status and then fly another airline to get status there. So they were very sort of surgical on what they were doing and when. Sometimes it was inconvenient, like changing hotels in the middle of the week. But it was like, yeah, I want to get status in both places. And then they would have that for the rest of the year. So
I don't go that far.
Yeah.
I don't personally.
I knew
a lot of business travelers do that, but I don't try. I mean, I don't stay in hotels. Right. Paid hotels enough to do that.
Yeah, yeah. So super interesting when it's like the company is paying for it, but you have like some control on where you can stay. Sometimes you do not, but I was exposed to like, essentially I hoarded points in like the simplest way. And then I hung on to them until like, I think we took a first class flight cross country. So that I was like, okay, it's a long flight. It'll be worthwhile to do it. I've been hanging on to these points for like 3 or 4 years. So may as well use them. I'm obviously not using them for anything else. So, okay. I derailed us a little bit there. So
it's okay. I want to talk about annual fees.
Yeah.
Cause you mentioned your $95 annual fee, right? Mm-hmm. So a lot of people hear that and they immediately like, no way. There's all these credit cards I can get without paying an annual fee. That's dumb, right? This is a pay to play game. You have got, if you want the good sign up bonuses, generally speaking, they're going to come with an annual fee. And sometimes it's even pretty hefty. You would probably freak out. Some people might freak out if I tell you that I have a card that has a $550 annual fee. Oh my God. Right. But the value that that card provides and perks absolutely makes up for it. We'll get into let's just get into it right now. Let me tell you about that specific card. This is my ride or die. We have 20 cards between us, but my Chase Sapphire Reserve I've had now for, I don't know, probably 8 years or something like that, probably more. It's my absolute ride or die. I've had all the premium cards, the Capital One Venture X, the Amex Platinum. I've had them all. The Chase Sapphire Reserve is my favorite. Mainly, they make using all of the credits really easy. So it comes with it's $550 a year. It comes with a $300 travel credit. You don't have to jump through any hoops to get it. You don't have to go through their website. You don't have to activate anything. Basically, like I just bought a flight last month and it just automatically takes it off your statement. So easy. So that brings the price down to $250 a year. Okay. What else? They pay for your global entry and TSA PreCheck. They give you a priority pass membership, which is more than 2,000 airport lounges all over the world. So wherever you are, there's usually going to be a lounge or two available, unless it's a really small airport. And you can go into these lounges for free. And let me tell you, if you haven't been in one, it's pretty great. You know, nice clean bathrooms without lines. It's not crazy loud. Sometimes they're crowded. It's true. But it's still better than being out in the chaos of the rest of the airport. I love my lounge access. Also, the Chase Sapphire Reserve card, that the bank has started building reserve lounges. There's not a ton of them yet, but they have one at LaGuardia that I got to go into last year. Oh my God. I felt so spoiled. They have a menu you can order from, a buffet, cocktails. Everything's included. You're not paying a dime unless you want to tip the bartender, which you should. They had a like a spa area where you could book time to go and just sit in this room. You could like choose the color and the sound and just kind of lay there and relax. There were free facials. Like, I'm like, you've got to be kidding me with this. It was wild. That's just a few of the perks. They also have best in class travel insurance. I mean, things like medical evacuation, trip cancellation, car insurance. It covers itself, right? It covers itself. Not to mention, you know, the sign-up bonus the first year, because that's the thing. The first year you get the sign-up bonus and it's pretty easy to say it's worth it because I'm earning this much in travel from the sign-up bonus. But then in year two, when that comes due again, you're like, do I want to keep this? You kind of have to assess it every year and decide if it's still worth it. But that one for me, worth it every year.
And we'll go a little deeper on this too. So when I got that United card, it's Chase is the bank, but I think there may have been four. I feel like there were four levels, but there could have been three. But basically, there was like a free business card. There was a $95 one. There was the $600 one, and there might have been another. So the thing is, like, you could choose the one that aligns to whatever kind of travel that you're doing. So I looked at the $95 one and the $600 one. And I was like, I don't travel enough, or the type of flights that I will be taking, I won't be able to, for example, take advantage of the lounge access, because I'm not taking international flights. I often don't have layovers. I'm not really spending a lot of time in an airport unless like something got fucked up with cancellations or some weather issue or something like that. So, and I just, even though the lounges are super nice, quite rare for me to be like stuck at the airport these days.
Okay. Right? But let me just say, you fly out of Denver and they have a Capital One lounge now.
Right.
Have you been in there yet? Do you have a Capital One Venture X?
I don't, but Carl and Mindy, they do. And they got me in
there.
But
sometimes you fly without them, right?
Correct. They have a United lounge too. So.
Oh, okay. Okay. I was just saying that could be a good one, because then for every flight out of Denver, you can go in that lounge. It's very, very upscale, kind of like the Chase one. Yep. And if you have the Capital One Venture X, you can always use that. So just FYI.
Yeah. While the thing is, I still don't spend a ton of time in, especially my home airport. Again, something has to be screwed up for me to be like stuck in my own airport.
Okay. Fair.
But I mean, it doesn't mean it's not cool to be able to go in there, but it's just like, okay, I could like leave later or hang out at the airport longer. I'm like, I'll probably not hang out at the airport longer.
Okay. So, okay. Well, that's fair. Yeah. That's fair. Well, and I do want to say, I think some people start questioning when we talk about these annual fees, like, oh my God, how much do you pay in annual fees every year? And you got to do that. Do you keep them forever? Just keep paying forever. So we talked about, you know, every year when the annual fee comes due, just, you got to look at it and be like, do the perks, you know, is it worth it? And I do think there's another myth out there about credit scores, that if you close a card, it's just going to wreck you. And that is not true, unless, caveat, if it's the card you've had for the longest, you know, it's like the card you've had since college, don't close that card because of the credit history, right? Because that does play a lot in your credit score, the length of credit history. So if you close your oldest card, that's a problem. Don't close that one.
Quick question. How much does that affect you? I'm curious, because I have heard this. How much does it impact you for real? Do you know?
I am not an expert on that. I am so sorry. But I know that in the points and miles game, there's quite a few like just general rules of thumb. And that is one, that opening a card, new card, isn't going to affect your credit score that much. But closing your oldest card will. How much is a lot? I'm sorry. I don't know.
Got it. Okay.
Just don't do it.
All right. So one, as a conversation piece here, I'm not telling people to do this, but I had a foreclosure in 2013, and basically everyone would give you the advice, don't do that, it's going to fuck up your credit score, right? Do you want to guess how far my credit went down? It was it was 810. How much do you think it went down like in the next year?
After closing your oldest card?
No,
after the foreclosure.
Foreclosure.
200 points.
No, it was about 90. It was still 720. Yeah. So it's just like, what? I mean, that's a lot, and it dropped, and I have a foreclosure, but then it went away after 7 years. I couldn't get a mortgage for 7 years, but I didn't need to get one. So
interesting.
Another story for a different day and all that. But that's the thing. It's just like, while it's good advice, maybe people don't do it. This is not financial advice. We're just talking, right? But maybe it just drops by like 20 points, which is kind of a lot, but it's just like, if you're at 20 and it drops to 800.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. As long as you're over 700, you're usually going to get approved for most of these cards. And I think most of our people are probably over 800. So what's, you know, it's not a big deal. This is where it starts to get confusing, but it's okay. I promise. Once you start doing this, if I can do it, you can do it. Okay. So there's different types of points and miles. Okay. You've got your airline miles, like your United, right? Your United hotel points, Hyatt points, Marriott points. And then there's the transferable points. And these are awesome. So your Chase business card you have earns Chase Ultimate Rewards. I just call them Chase points. People call them URs for short, whatever. It doesn't matter. Same thing. So there's Chase Ultimate Rewards. There's Amex membership rewards. There's Citi thank you points. There's Capital One miles. They're all transferable currencies. These are the most valuable. When you're starting in this game, this is really what you want to focus on because it just opens so many doors for travel. I think Chase has maybe like a dozen transfer partners. So I can send my Chase points to Hyatt and book free hotels. I can send my Chase points to United and book free flights to United. Southwest Airlines. I mean, there's like I said, like a dozen. So they open up way more doors, give you lots more options. You can also use these transferable currencies to book travel through the bank's portal. So like on chase.com, when you're logged in, you can, you know, look up hotels and airfare and book it that way. But that's usually not a great idea because the redemptions aren't usually as good as you would get from like transferring and doing it directly. In addition, if you use those portals, they're like third party. So if your flight gets canceled, you can't call United and deal with it. You have to call like Expedia, I think, who runs a lot of these portals, and it just turns into a nightmare. So generally speaking, for flights, I don't know, I would be a little leery of using the portal. I would, for your transferable currencies, transfer them, book directly with the airline. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. Because I have booked a couple times through Expedia or third party, and then if a change happens and you try to call the hotel or the airline or whatever, there's always like a disconnect and they're like, oh, you booked over here, we can't really. So yeah, that totally makes sense. Now the question is, when is it a good time to book through the Chase travel portal or some other travel portal? Is there any time when it's a good idea to book a flight or hotel?
I mean, sometimes you'll find a really, really, really good deal on the portal and it might make it worth taking the risk. I don't even check when it comes to flights. I might check hotels and rental cars because those are a little bit easier to deal with if something goes south. I have booked, for instance, the Capital One Venture X card. It gives me a $300 travel credit every year, but you have to book the travel through their portal, which is kind of annoying, which is why I prefer my Chase Sapphire Reserve. But I'll use it for rental car bookings to get that $300. Because if things go south, like I said, a little bit easier to unwind than flights.
Why is it easier to unwind it?
Well, I mean, if you're in it, like you're in an airport and flights are leaving and departing and it, you know, who knows how long it'll take to, I don't know. You asked me a hard question. All I know is that I'm in all these groups. Okay. I'm in all right. These groups online and they're always talking about just the absolute nightmare scenarios they end up with when they book an airfare through the portal and things go sideways. Like it's just, ugh. I don't want to, okay. I'm not even going to experiment with that. So another thing that gets a little confusing with these transferable currencies, when you start looking at points. So say if you had like 10 cards in front of you and you're trying to choose your next card, you might be like, oh, that offers 100,000 points and this one's only 50. Well, that's clearly the better deal. Not necessarily. Okay. Because 2 points are not always greater than one. It depends on the kind of point. So let me give you an example. Hyatt points are actually really valuable. I'd rather have 30,000 Hyatt points than 100,000 Hilton points all day long because I can get pretty decent Hyatt hotels for 7,500 points a night, whereas Hilton's probably going to charge me like 40,000 points a night. Okay. Mm-hmm. So don't get hung up on that. And then there's an easy way to figure out what provides you more value. And we'll get into that, but just don't look at a list and be like 100,000. I'm going to do that one. Don't do that. Okay. So more points does not equal always more value. So generally speaking, these bank transferable points, these are the currencies that you should prioritize just because it opens up so many more options for you. Generally speaking, by the time you math it out, those are usually worth roughly like 2 cents per point. So like 100,000 Chase points might be worth like $2,000 in travel. That's pretty good, right? Pretty good.
Very good.
Airline miles are usually worth more like 1, maybe 1.5 cents per point. So 100,000 airline miles might get you $1,000 to $1,500 in flights. Hotel points are generally worth less than 1 cent per point. Okay. Not Hyatt. They're an exception, but 100,000 Marriott points are usually like $500 to $800 in free hotels. So just FYI on that.
Okay.
So domestic. Yes. Go ahead.
Yeah. So I want to ask, you know, we gave the little values here and we'll put together some nice show notes so people can take a look and get a bit of a summary here. But when I have, you know, used 100,000 to make the math easy here. So let's say I have 100,000 Chase points. If I do the cash back or redeem the points or whatever, those are usually like 1 point.
Yeah. If you cash in 100,000 Chase points for cash back, I'm going to slap you in the face.
Okay.
Do not do that.
And I think you mentioned, well, the
I
thing
won't
is,
I really slap you, Doug.
Well, then it was like, well, I have to transfer it somewhere and then I have to use. So it's like, it depends on like how much I want to hassle with it, right? Because I have to transfer it over, which sounds super complicated, right?
It's not. I just booked a flight the other day. So you just go into your app or, you know, log in online, you know, it's like use points, transfer to partner. You know, you've probably already done it before. So you've set up your partners, but I'm like, I want to transfer it to this airline. How many points do you want to send? Click send. It's usually instantaneous. In some rare cases, it takes a little bit longer to transfer. They tell you it'll be 24 to 72 hours, but I have never had a case where it didn't transfer automatically. And then I hop over to the airline and now I've got all the points in my account and I book it like 10 minutes, maybe. Easy.
Got it. Okay.
Sounds harder than it is. It's not that hard.
All right. And you were moving on to flights and such.
Yeah. So just generally speaking, you know, a domestic flight round trip is going to be like 25 to 50,000 miles points. We use these words interchangeably. Don't get hung up on that. Miles points, same thing. Okay. Business, 45 to 75,000. Again, this is domestic round trip. Okay. International economy round trip is going to be like 60 to 100,000 points or miles. Business round trip, 110 to 190. I'm just going to give you an example because I just booked this last week. I am flying in October because my Five Friends Travel Group is going to Morocco from St. Louis to Casablanca. And I got a business class seat one way, St. Louis to Casablanca, for 56,000 American miles. I was very happy with that redemption. That sounds good, right?
Wow. Yeah.
On the way home, I wasn't able to find such a good redemption. Actually, they had some good ones on American, but at this point, I didn't have any more. American points are hard to come by because they don't no one transfers to American. So I ended up transferring Chase points to Flying Blue, which is KLM and Air France. So for my flight home, I actually business, it was like 200, 300,000 points. So that wasn't happening. I booked, I think it ended up being like 60,000 points in economy. That was the best redemption I can do. It's still fine. Mm-hmm. It's not optimal, but it's what's available. So that's what I went with. So just to kind of give you an idea of the ranges of what you can expect. And we'll get more into that. And we talk about redemptions here a little bit later. But as far as how to choose your next card, and I know you can be like, oh my God, there's so many cards out there. How do I know 100,000 points here versus 50,000 points? Which one's the better value? Like, I don't know. I don't know what I don't know. Right. So ultimately, you're going to want to look at all the cards that are available to you, choose the one that offers the best value overall, not just points, but also perks and stuff like that. You have to consider all of that. There is a website, 10X Travel. I love these guys. They have, just Google it, 10X best cards list. We'll have a link in the show notes, but I always just Google it pretty frequently. 10X best cards list. They have done the work for you. They have gone through and figured out what car every month they update this. They have figured out every month they have a list. Number one is the most value card currently available. Number two is the most value card after that. And then just down through the list, it just makes it simple. So generally speaking, the strategy is just do the first one. And when it's time to open the next card, do the second one. And when it's time to open the next card, do the third one. And it just is going to keep it a lot simpler for you.
Okay. Got it. And for me, when I picked the United card, I was like, oh, this seems like a reasonable bonus. I knew I was going to be able to like use that card well, because the one that I got has like two annual passes into the lounges plus the other normal perks at that $95 per year fee. So
free checked bags too, right?
Yep. Yeah. Checked bag. Yeah. There were a handful. You get to board early, like all the sort of normal stuff. So that's the way I picked it, which I mean, I think people can take into account the kind of things they're going to be doing. So if someone's...
You can.
Yeah.
But strategically, it usually makes sense to start with the most value and work your way down, because you're earning transferable points and it just opens up a lot of options. Because those transferable points, you can send to United and still fly United if you wanted to. You might even find there's a better option than United.
Okay. So, okay. Although when I'm thinking about it, with the free checked bag in the boarding early, I wouldn't necessarily have that with the Chase like non-United card.
Fair.
Right?
Fair.
So like it depends on what luxury you want to take advantage of. So sort of the converse or a different example would be if I was doing a road trip and I knew that I was going to stay at Hyatt's, which it sounds like that's one of the, you know, highest point values.
Yeah.
And maybe you get perks there. What kind of perks do the hotels have? Like free upgrades or whatever?
There's so many. I would have to look it up. I'm sorry. I don't know off the top of my head. But a lot of times with these hotels, you get some sort of status for having their card. So, I mean, that might just mean they give you two bottles of water when you check in. But a lot of times it means early check-ins, late checkouts, upgraded rooms, which is really, really nice. But off the top of my head, I can't remember which cards do what. It just depends.
Cool. Okay. And that makes total sense. So it sounds like you can work your way down the list. At the same time, if you know you're traveling in a specific way, like flying a specific airline because the hub is in your city and blah, blah, blah. Or if you're not flying and you're like doing hotel domestic travel via road trip, then maybe it makes sense to like take advantage of like that specific hotel chain. So cross-reference.
Fair. Yeah.
Probably. Okay.
So as far as strategy goes, generally speaking, you should consider opening a new card anytime that you are not working on a sign-up bonus. Okay. That might hurt your brain. I know. Like, oh my God, I haven't opened a card in 3 years. You're talking about. And like I said, there are people that do a new one every month. I'm comfortable with every 3 months. Okay. If you haven't been approved for a card in the last 30 days, though, you can usually open another card. I do 90 days because that pace just is my happy place. Okay. But generally in this game, we say always be working on a sub. SUB stands for sign up bonus. You are going to get a denial at some point. It's happened to me. It's happened to everybody that does this game. It's okay. Don't take it personally. People, I see it all the time in these groups because I'm in all these Facebook groups and stuff. They're like, I have an 820 credit score. Why on earth would they deny me? Right? It's not about that. There's all these stupid little rules. And sometimes they're not written rules. And sometimes you can't even figure out what the unwritten rule is. There's a lot of like, I mean, I've been trying to get the Capital One Venture X for like 2 years. I tried, they denied me. I tried again 6 months later, they denied me. And then like all of a sudden they approved me. Like there's not a whole lot of rhyme or reason in it sometimes. But you're going to get a denial. Okay. So there's a thing in this business, in this little game we call reconsideration calls. And you can Google it. Like it's not the normal number. Like if you just call the number for Chase Bank and you get somebody and you're like, why did you guys, they're not going to be able to help you very much. So you got to Google Chase credit card reconsideration line phone number or whatever. Those are the people who could actually make something happen. So let me give you an example. I had my Chase Sapphire Reserve. You can get sign up bonuses on cards more than once. There's rules about how often that is. With the Chase Sapphire Reserve, if it's been at least 48 months since you've gotten the sign up bonus, you can get another one, but you can't have two cards. So what do you do? I downgraded my Chase Sapphire Reserve to a no annual fee version of that card, the Chase Sapphire, what's it called? The Chase Freedom Unlimited. That's what it was. You don't need to remember all this, but I'm just kind of telling you what I did. I waited a month and then I was going to open another Chase Sapphire Reserve to get the sign-up bonus again, because that's usually kind of the strategy. They're like, no. They're like, you have too much credit with us, which is fair. I get a ton of credit with Chase. It's fair. But I said, well, I've got this Chase card with $20,000 limit. And I've got this other Chase card with a $20,000 limit. What if you take some of that limit from those other cards and put it on this card? Can we do that? He went away for a few minutes, put me on hold, came back and was like, sure, let me open the card. So don't just assume because they say no, you're done. Do reconsideration calls. And there's also something called hookah. You ever heard of this? Hookah? H-U-C-A, hookah?
You smoke
okay.
it?
Okay. No. H-U-C-A, yeah. Okay. So in this little game, hookah stands for hang up, call again. Because a lot of times you'll get somebody, these agents, you know more than they do. And if they're just telling you something that they say no, just hang up and call somebody else. Yeah. Try. They usually say try this like three times before you give up. So just saying. I haven't done a whole lot of that. I have done reconsideration calls though. So
okay.
There you go.
And I think a quick observation. So the people that are getting the denials with the high credit scores, the thing in common is they're opening like a fuckload of cards in a short time, right?
Yes.
Like that's why people are getting denials.
Usually.
Okay.
You got too much credit with our bank. You've had too many inquiries lately. You had this card less than however many months ago. We can't give it to you again. Like things like
they're
that.
They're on to you. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And you just got to wait, be creative. I like that transferring the credit limit.
Yeah.
Little shell game, smoke and mirrors going on. Okay. Got it. Very
okay.
Good.
Couple rules with this. So you open a new card, right? Some people will be like, well, I do not want to pay that annual fee the second year. So I'm going to close my card 8 months after I've opened it so that annual fee doesn't hit. Do not do this. Okay. If you close a credit card less than a year afterwards, there's a lot of these banks, they will claw back your sign up bonus. Like you have got, it's in the terms and conditions. You usually have to wait a year. Okay. So just, and the way that you know it's been a year is the annual fee hits your account. So wait for the annual fee to hit your account, then decide what you're going to do. Generally speaking, if you do decide you want to close it, if you call within 30 days of the annual fee hitting, you close it, they refund the annual fee, generally speaking. But always just make sure you're keeping these cards for at least that 1 year. So you should evaluate every card you own every year. We sort of hit on this. When the annual fee hits, take a look. Do I want to keep this? The way that you decide this, obviously, if it offers you enough ongoing value, like my Chase Sapphire Reserve, I'm never getting rid of that card. I'll pay every year. Easy. But if so, it offers enough ongoing value to justify its annual fee, you keep it, whatever. Sometimes there might be a significant downside to closing it. Like there are some cards, if you close them, you're going to lose your points. Don't do that. That would be a really bad move. So definitely keep it if you would lose your points, which is generally only true in those transferable currencies. So for instance, if the only Chase point earning card that I had was my Chase Sapphire Reserve, and I close that, my points are gone. Okay. However, if I had a Southwest Airlines card, when you earn your points, they go into your Southwest account, not your credit card account, your Southwest.com account, right? So the points are in there. So if you close the card, you don't lose your points. Does that make sense?
Yep. So
it gets a little confusing, I know.
It's exactly my situation with the United card. So I could close the United card and then still retain my points.
Yes.
And I would lose the other benefits along with the $95 per year fee that I'm
yes.
paying.
Yes. And your Chase business credit card, if that's the only card that you have that earns Chase Ultimate Rewards and you close that, you would lose your points because it's those transferable currencies you have to be concerned about. So now, as a caveat, if you have another Chase card that earns Chase points, then your points would stay with that. Does that make sense? So like, for instance, if I closed one of my Chase Ultimate Rewards earning cards right now that has like 50,000 points on the account or whatever, it would be fine because I've got like four other cards that earn Ultimate Rewards. So they would kind of stay in my little pot. It's just if you have one card that earns those kind of points and you close it, they're gone. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yep. And I was going to say same situation. So I have a Chase Freedom from the old days, and then I have a Chase Ink. So if I close the Ink,
they would go to the other. Yeah. Yes, 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 yes. So again, the card that's your single oldest credit card, closing that could harm your score. Don't close those. Okay. So the other thing is, if you decide you don't want it anymore, yes, you can close it. But what might be better is to downgrade it. So because here's why. We talked about that credit utilization ratio earlier. if you've got this much credit, which is making your credit score really high, and you cancel one of your cards that has a $20,000 credit limit, your credit utilization ratio goes up. It might negatively affect your credit score a little bit. So ideally, you want to keep this massive amount of credit, right? It's good. It helps your credit score. So in that case, you don't necessarily have to close it. You can call them and be like, hey, do you have a no annual fee version of this card that you could just product change me to? That doesn't affect your credit report in any way. It's not a new hard inquiry. They're just changing you. Now, you don't get the sign-up bonus on that card. But basically, the amount of credit that you had with card A now gets moved to card B. So your credit utilization ratio stays nice and low, right? Your credit score stays nice and high. And they just product change you to that card. There's no more annual fee. And your credit score stays good. Does that make sense?
Yep, it does. Although I do have a... You know, you're mentioning if you close a card and the credit utilization and your credit score, this is a bit of the tail wagging the dog, right? So it's like you have been opening a bunch of cards, so your utilization has gone down. I don't think, I mean, everyone should evaluate like closing cards, opening cards, your credit score, all that kind of stuff. But it's just like, okay, if you've had the card for a year, you've identified, you're like, I don't want this card anymore. I should close it. So maybe in a few more years, you could do another bonus with that card and all that. Like, it's okay to close them sometimes, right?
It is. I mean, if there's a downgrade option, you know, that's easy, go for it. Why not? Right? And then just throw it in a drawer. Like, that's what I do. But if there's not a downgrade option available, which in some cards cases there isn't, close it. It's fine. It's fine. Again, assuming it's not your oldest card, caveat, just close it. I've closed cards. It's not a big deal. Like the Southwest card, there's not a no annual fee version of that one. So after I've had that one for a couple years, I'll close it. I'll wait a couple months. I'll reopen it again, get the sign-up bonus again. Because that one, if it's been at least 24 months since you've gotten the sign-up bonus, you can earn it again. Funny story about that. I live in St. Louis where there's a gazillion Southwest flights that go out of here. So about everybody in town has a Southwest card they've probably had for 10 years. These people have no clue they can get that sign-up bonus again. I'll tell them, I'm like, how long have you had that card? They're like, 12 years. You realize if you close it, you can like open it again and get, they have no clue. And the sign-up bonus on that one's so easy. You only have to spend like $1,000. I'm like, every 2 years you can get a new sign-up bonus. Like, what?
Wow.
It's good to know this stuff.
Yeah. And well, I'm curious, where do you keep track of all of this? So you're famously now that you've been on the show several times, you don't use spreadsheets, right? Because in my head,
suck at that. Yeah.
Keep a spreadsheet. You got a list. You got alerts popping up and different things like that. How do you keep track of this?
Is it Post-it notes
all over your house or something?
I will tell you that a lot of people do use spreadsheets for this. I don't know how to make a spreadsheet. So, and before I started tracking it effectively, it bit me. I'll give you an example of that. I'd had my husband open a card. We got the sign-up bonus. A couple years later, he closed it. We're going to reopen it again. He meets the sign-up, the minimum spend. He meets the minimum spend. The points don't show up. So I'm like, well, let's call them and figure out what's going on. They're like, it had only been 22 months since you last earned the sign-up bonus.
Oh, man.
It had to be 24 before you could earn it again. So it was a complete waste of time. I was so mad at myself. I'm like, dang it. I got to do better at this. There is an app. It's a website and an app called Travel Freely, and we'll include it in the show notes. It's free. And you just put in all your cards when you opened them. It's so great because they'll literally like email you when it's time to open your next card, when your annual fee is coming due. Hey, reminder, you only have a week left to make your sign-up bonus. And I mean, it's really great. So it tracks all of this. It actually will tell you based on what cards you have, what might be the next highest recommended card for you to get. It caught me a week or two ago. I was trying to open a new card and I'm like, why is this card not showing up in my list? I'm sure I'm eligible for it. They know I'm not eligible even when I can't figure it out because I was like, I'm going to apply anyway. Amex is cool because it will tell you, a box will pop up and it'll say, you're not eligible for the sign-up bonus on this card because do you still want to proceed? Which is great.
That is nice.
So I was like, I'm just going to try it. So I go in, try to apply for the card and it's like, yeah, you're not eligible because it's been less than however long since you got this card last time. And I'm like, really? So log all your stuff in the Travel Freely app on the website. It tracks all this stuff for you. It guides you. It makes all this stuff way simpler. I will tell you, 10X Travel, who I talked about that has the best cards list, they also have a version of this that a lot of people like. So look at them both, see which one you like the best, but they're both great and an easy way for someone like me to track who doesn't do spreadsheets.
Got it. Okay. So I'm always nervous when there's a free service, right? So you mentioned, oh yeah, they'll do this for free. So you're the product, right? So they're trying to get you to sign up for other cards. What are they selling? Right?
What's in it for them?
Yeah,
they just want you to use the referral links. They just want you to use the referral links to get to open your new credit cards. That's it. That's it. Couple other things I want to point out here, especially since I've been dealing with a lot of contractors lately. A lot of contractors, and I'm seeing it in everyday life. You go to places and it's like, if you want to use your credit card, there's a 3% fee. You're seeing a lot more of that now too, aren't you? Just generally speaking.
Yeah, random fees all over the place. Yeah.
Yeah. So generally speaking, people have mathed this out and it really only makes sense to pay using a credit card if that fee is included, only if you're working on a sign-up bonus. Okay. If you're working on a sign-up bonus, paying that extra 3% makes sense. If you're not working on a sign-up bonus, then just don't use. Yeah. Does that make sense?
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. So, and the thing is, well, a lot of people,
I mean, if it's only going to be 20 cents, who cares? But like, if it's a $10,000, you know, contractor job and it's going to cost you however many hundreds of dollars to use your card, if you're working on a sign-up bonus, which I would say it's a great time to open a new card.
It is. Luckily, we don't have any things like that. But if you do know you have a big expense coming up or you're like booking a very large trip or something like that, it could be a good time because you could like open a card and then like get the whole bonus in like one transaction, which is cool.
Well, Ken, example, I just had some, and you'll hear more about it later, but some major issues going on in my basement. Anyway, four new cards, four new sign-up bonuses, one fell swoop. Very proud of myself. I opened two. My husband opened two.
No kidding.
And yep.
How long does it take to get approved? Because I don't open cards too often. How long does it take to like get the card and actually use it? And this wasn't a fun thing, right? We'll talk about it later, but you got four new cards and it wasn't a fun spending
experience. Wasn't a fun expense. It wasn't a fun expense.
Yeah, how long to get the cards so you can use them for stuff like that?
Okay, so about a month prior to having to do this spend, it was just time for us to open new cards. So I had opened us two new cards. So we hadn't met the minimum spend on those yet. And then when this huge expense came up, I was like, let me see if I can get us two more cards. So I did. One of the cards came in the mail. It usually takes like 7 to 10 days. But, you know, by the time you're getting the bids and everything and getting work scheduled, you got time, right? The one I opened for my husband, it was a little bit tighter and it probably wasn't going to be here in time. Amex will actually give you the option to show you your credit card number before it comes in the mail. So I was like, yes, please. What's the number? What's the number? So I was able just to give them the number over the phone and didn't have the physical card.
Got it.
But sometimes you have to wait for it.
Cool. I thought there were a couple companies that would let you use it beforehand or before you actually receive the physical card. So I think if it's cool with you, Kristen, I think let's wrap up this episode and we'll kind of take a little detour here. Does that sound good to you?
Sounds good.
All right. So one thing I want to give you a chance to talk about is your little project. Your travel project.
My little passion project.
Yeah. So what's going on these days? We haven't talked in about a month or so, but I've been getting your emails and stuff, and I'll just let you talk about it.
So I am very passionate about travel, as you probably already figured out. I also really like planning travel. I'm just a planner by nature. In recent years, I've been doing trips with friends that I kind of planned, and I was like, why not just kind of do this on a bigger scale? I love hanging out with five people. I mean, I go to all these campfires and economies and I love all this stuff. So why not just combine that? So this is what I've done. I have a website, Five Friends Travel. We'll include a link in the show notes, right, Doug? Mm-hmm. Okay, Five Friends Travel. And basically, I'm just creating group travel to take the five community all over the world. I'm on all these trips. I basically plan trips that I want to go on and invite my friends is basically what it is. So we are going to, my Portugal trip sold out. That's in April. And then in October, I'm going to take a group of 20 for 2 weeks to Morocco. As of today, that one still has some spots left. This Christmas, we are going to do a Danube River cruise on Avalon to visit the Christmas markets. We're traveling between Vienna and Nuremberg. That's a ship, so there's still lots of spots left, but it's a river cruise. So there's only, it usually averages about like 150 passengers. So it's not like a giant, you know, cruise ship. And then I'm starting to think about 2026. I sent out a survey to all my subscribers and had them vote, like, which trips would you consider for 2026? And I kind of had a list of things that I've been picking up over time. People are like, oh, I want to do this, I want to do that. Number one vote getter. Did you happen to see that email, Doug?
I saw the email, but I've been bad at
it. You're not reading my emails. It's okay. It's okay. We'll talk about it here.
Yeah.
We'll talk about it here. So the number one vote getter was an African safari in Tanzania. So I'm going to plan an African safari in Tanzania for 2026. Another one is going to be a river cruise in the spring of 2026 to the Netherlands and Belgium during tulip time. And then I'll also try to plan the other top vote getters, three or four in 2026. We'll see where we land. But if you go to fivefriendstravel.com, you can see what trips are currently booking. And also at the bottom of the page is a place to subscribe. Just put in your email and I'll send you an update every week. So you'll be the first to know when new trips launch.
Very good. Yeah, we'll link up to that stuff. And quick note, I've actually been on the Tulip Time cruise. That's Avalon as well, right?
With Avalon, yeah. So yeah, basically the same cruise that we're probably exactly going on in 2026. Yeah. Okay. How was that? Let's talk about it.
It was awesome.
Because I haven't been. I want to know what to expect.
It was awesome. It was, you know, at this point, it was 2010 when we went on it. We drank a lot. It's in Belgium and the Netherlands. It's a blur, a haze, a drunken. We went to, there's like a unlimited, you know, drinks on the ship there. And it is a river cruise. I've never been on a large ship, but we would go to like convenience stores. I'm very much into beer, folks. So I would go and just buy like cool beers and we would bring them on the bus when we were doing excursions. We would bring them on the ship and it was just like a super fun time. So yeah, really
cool.
Well,
let me add to this that we have every intention, because I've got some people that are going to go who are super into Belgian beer. I'm not a beer person. I know nothing about it, but I've learned that Belgian beer is apparently a big deal. Mm-hmm. So we're going to, for those who are interested, going to add a little, turn it into our own beer cruise of sorts. Go to some Belgian breweries, get some beer to bring it on board, do our own tasting. So if you're really into beer, there are quite a few people that are going to come along who are also into beer, and we're going to create some interesting experiences. I mean, it is a Tulip Time cruise, so it is about, you know, visiting all these cool cities and seeing some of that too, but we're going to add a little fun beer component.
Gotcha.
Yeah, spring 2026.
It should be fantastic. I was going to say our cruise was a little on the early side. So
what's early? Do you remember?
I'd have to look back. We actually still have like the little book of the itinerary and like little, I don't know what they give you, like a little folder with stuff.
Okay.
Information in there. So I could actually find the exact date, but a lot of the tulips were not blooming. So there's big gardens everywhere. So it was like a tad cold, a little bit early. But the cool part is we were the first group to take that ship. So they like had the crew on there for like a couple days to make sure everything was running. But it was like a brand new, shiny, awesome ship, which was very nice. I don't know how long they last. I wonder if it's like the same ship. I mean, I guess they last a long time, right?
Like think about how long they keep planes in the air. Probably sticks around for a while.
Yeah, yeah. So super cool. Lots of fun. There's actually a book, which I'll potentially like put a link in the show notes, but it's like Belgian beers written by a beer journalist named Michael Jackson from the UK. And it's like hundreds of pages of Belgian beers, like super thorough. So I studied that for like,
oh, wow. You're really into
months.
It. Okay.
Yeah, extremely into it. And the thing is, like, there's great beer bars listed in that book. So we went to like amazing beer bars in like Antwerp. Antwerp was like one of the main places where I was like, all right, we gotta spend some time here. Super fun. They have like vintages of the beers. And yeah, I could go on for days, but But yeah, should be an awesome cruise. And we'll link up so people can check it out.
Yay.
All right. And next episode, so this is a two-parter. Next episode, we're going to hit even more pro tips. And I think that's it for today. So everybody, thanks for checking it out. We'll link up to all the stuff we mentioned before. And thanks, Kristen. I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the show. That was the Mile High Five podcast, and I'm Doug Cunnington. If you dig the show, please do three things for us. Number one, tell a friend, a family member, an enemy about the show. We really don't care who you tell. Maybe forward them a specific show that you know that they will like. It's the single most helpful thing that you can do to spread the word. It's like giving us a virtual high five, and actually we don't give high fives in person, so the virtual kind's pretty good. And more importantly, your friend or family member or even your enemy will appreciate the fact that you were thinking of them. Number two, make sure you're following or subscribed on your podcast app, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Overcast, YouTube, whatever you're using, and that way you won't miss a show. And number three, please leave us a rating and review. We read them on the show occasionally, and you might hear yours out there on an upcoming episode. Quick disclaimer, this show is not financial or legal advice. I'd actually be surprised if it sounded like it. It's really just for entertainment, and that's at least what we're hoping for. But seriously, get advice from professionals. So we'll catch y'all next week. So the day that we're recording this, it's kind of towards the end of January. It's very cold here in Colorado, like negative 13 or something like that. Like it's
actual
pretty chilly.
Degrees or wind chill?
That's actual degrees. It's pretty cold.
Oh, God.
Yeah, ugh. It's pretty cold. And the thing is, like, we're pretty lucky here. We're in a relatively, like, brand new house. We bought it new in 2020. So, like, it's well insulated. We don't have pipes, like, on external walls where you have to worry about stuff. But, Kristen, I understand your home ownership journey recently has been interesting. Can you tell me about it?
It has. Oh, gosh. Okay. So our house, we love it. It's 96 years old, though. It's pretty well renovated on the inside, but there's some other things that are hidden that haven't been renovated. So a couple of weeks ago, our washing machine stopped draining. It was flooding our basement. Now, in all fairness, it's not a finished basement. It wasn't a huge deal. But some water would kind of come outside of the drain, and then 2 hours later, it would go down, and we're like, okay, we got a clog, whatever. We called the plumbers out. They pulled back mud. So the pipes had collapsed, or the original cast iron pipes under the house. So then they got into another section of the basement, ran a camera for us, and we could see throughout the basement all these places where, like, the bottom of the pipe had just rusted away and washed away. Like, it was just sitting on dirt. Yeah. So now it's like, oh my God, how long has water just been running under our house? You know, like, oh my heavens. So what they have to do is completely jackhammer out the basement, pull the old pipe, put in the new pipe, reconcrete it. The first quote was $23,000. Oh my God. Yeah. The second one, and the one we ended up going with, was like $19,500. We talked to another guy who was kind of like a fly by night. He was going to cut corners. He was going to, like, not pull permits. He's like, I could do it for 13. And I'm like, yeah, we're not going to do that. So ultimately, we spent the whole last week dealing with this. We had to, like, clear everything out of our basement. And it's just that unsettled feeling of just everything, you know, people in your house and going on all week. So they finally finished yesterday morning. They, like, mopped the floors and they left. And I kid you not, 3 hours later, we had a frozen pipe burst. I'm like, you've got to be kidding me with this right now. No. You've got to be joking. Completely unrelated, just coincidence. I'm like, you're joking. Because it's really cold here and our pipes are old.
Good grief.
Fun times. I will tell you, when we sell this house in a few years, because our idea is we're going to sell the house and move abroad. Once we retire, we're thinking 2028. I don't know that we'll ever own again. Just to be able, because of the freedom and flexibility it provides too, but also property taxes and home insurance and maintenance. And my God, we're going to have to do a HVAC system later this year too. I'm just like, I'm over it. I'm over it, Doug. Good grief is right.
I'm glad that you were able to resolve it pretty quickly. It seems, yeah, the thing is, like, you highlighted a lot of the hidden costs for, like, owning a home. Obviously, there's some convenience, and some people, they're like, I mean, it's a lifestyle choice. Many people say it's a lifestyle choice. And it depends on the area. Some people are like, well, you know, your house is going to go up in value, which is a lot of times true, unless it doesn't go up in value, and then it doesn't, depending on when you buy it and, you know.